You're listening to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, your escape to reality.
Hello and welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Today is Tuesday, December 23rd, 2014, and this is your host, Stephen Novella. Joining me this week are Bob Novella.
Hey, everybody.
Rebecca Watson.
Hello, everyone.
Jay Novella.
Hey, guys.
And Evan Bernstein.
Good evening, everyone.
Hello.
So this is our traditional year-end wrap-up episode. This is the last episode for 2014. Have you guys all recovered from our big trip down under?
Yep.
Yes, for the most part.
No,
Jay,
I have not.
Steve, you guys typically get hammered. How are you guys feeling?
I'm still sleep-deprived.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just haven't really had the time to like sleep in and do the types of things that you should do when you're trying to get yourself back on track. Like, I've been working my ass off since we got home. So, no, I'm still tired.
I mean, are you supposed to sleep in or are you supposed to just get back into your regular daily rhythm?
Right.
I think that's the
The main thing. That's the main thing. It feels good to sleep, you know, late, you know, 9, 10, 11 if you can. But, yeah, I think just the regular rhythm, like Rebecca said, is the main thing. I think it just takes you guys a while to recover.
Well, yeah, we have a break for a couple of weeks because we had recorded so many shows while we were in Australia and New Zealand. We're just recording this show over the holiday break. And next week will be the live show that we did in Auckland. And then we'll get back to our regular schedule. So before we go into our best of and worst of 2014, we have some updates on the SGU. And the big one is that this is going to be the last episode that Rebecca is recording with us.
Yep.
After 9 years.
9 years. Almost a decade.
I know. Almost. You almost made it.
God. This is longer than any relationship I have ever had.
and it was a relationship with
four guys. Four
sometimes guys, five guys. Yeah. Sometimes
yeah.
five.
Yeah. It's true what they say about me.
that you're cool and fun to be with.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah, and so are you guys. I'm going to miss you guys, you know, but yeah, it's been almost a decade and I think it's about time for me to move on. And, you know, I'll still be around. I'm sure I can pop back on as a guest every now and again. If
you'll
have
always
me.
Be welcome. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And for those listeners out there that want to keep tabs on me, you still can. You can visit my Patreon. That's what I'm going to be devoting most of my time to, Patreon, patreon.com/Rebecca, R-E-B-E-C-C-A. Or you can find me on Twitter at Rebecca Watson, or of course on Skeptic, skeptic.org. So I'll be
you
around.
You still have a YouTube channel as well.
I do. I don't actually know the URL. I think.
Oh, gosh.
I think it's R-K Watson. But yeah, all of that goes through my Patreon. So that's the easiest way to find me.
I think it's incredible that we did what we did for the last 9 years together. Like, no bumps in the road. We haven't missed a show. We get along really well for people that work, you know, on something this, you know, this important to all of us, and, you know, skepticism and critical thinking and science and feminism and all the other things that are incredibly important to us. And we work on these things together. I've had such a positive experience when you take the aggregate of everything. I'm proud of us, and I'm proud of the fact that we've been able to do it together for so long. I mean, honestly, you know, you joked before, Rebecca, about relationships. Like, I, me too. Like, I've never had anything last this long.
Yeah.
It's real. Totally. It's a real accomplishment. And I'm so happy that I got to do it with all of you. And you, Rebecca, have been a huge part of it for me and like my go-to person for humor and a lot of other things on the show that I don't know. I just won't be able to replace. Like, you were very special to me and I love you on the show.
Oh, well, thank you, Jay. And, you know, I love you guys too. And obviously this has been, it's been a great trip and I'm really happy that, you know, you invited me along 9 years ago.
It was it was all my idea. I take full credit.
So,
all right.
mentioning nine years ago, let's go back a little bit more than 9 years ago. Let's go back to the first mention of Rebecca Watson on the show, March 9th, 2006.
Coming on our show in just a little bit is Rebecca Watson. Rebecca is the founder of the Skeptics organization. We'll be talking to her in just a moment. But first, we'll start, as usual, with some news items, things that have caught our attention over the last week.
So that was the interview.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
The first date.
Okay. Oh, right. Okay.
Yep. That was the first date.
Yeah.
But then on 3/15/2006, Rebecca actually was invited to the show and listen to this.
Hello and welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. Today is Wednesday, March 29th, 2006. This is your host, Stephen Novella, president of the New England Skeptical Society. With me tonight are Bob Novella.
Yeah.
Hello, everyone.
Perry DeAngelis.
Out like a lamb.
Jay Novella.
Hi, all.
And we have a new addition to our panel of skeptics, Rebecca Watson. Rebecca, welcome to the Skeptic's Guide.
Yay.
Thanks. Hi, everybody.
Welcome.
Yay.
Rebecca was on our episode a few episodes ago. Was on our show, and we thought that she was bright and witty and lent a good addition to the team, so we asked her to join us, and she agreed to.
I did.
So yes. Rebecca is the Skeptic. She runs Skeptic.org, publisher of the Skeptic calendar.
She writes a great blog. I recommend it to everybody.
Thank you very much.
So we're happy to have you aboard.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Wow. That was awesome.
You all sounded so young.
I know, right?
We did not know each other at all. Like that was
hell no.
You know, the voices sound like they know each other, but they don't. We didn't know each other. And I also noticed, I listened to a lot of the episodes. Like I was going back, you know, listening to all of these episodes, the ones that Rebecca's name are in the notes and, you know, trying to get a feel for what it was like. And man, like our chemistry back then was nothing compared, in my opinion, to what it is today. Like just the fact that we know each other so well. But the idea that Rebecca stepped into that group of guys and was able to slug it out with us from the beginning, to me, is very impressive.
Yeah, Jay, my favorite part, and we've told this a few times at least, after that very initial interview, is we all, literally all of us, had the same thought. Holy crap, we just have such chemistry. We got to ask her to be on the show. I don't even know who mentioned it first, but we all had the same exact thought. Like, she's got to be on the show. It's just like, there's just too much chemistry there. So that was such a fun thing to happen.
Yeah. And you know, it wasn't like I was going into a lion's den or anything. You know, it was really awesome to do a show with you guys, and everybody was so friendly and, you know, easy to talk to. It was very easy. So.
But keep in mind, too, now you guys met Rebecca. I didn't meet Rebecca. Perry didn't meet Rebecca
That's
at all,
right.
actually ever in person. So yeah. I met Rebecca at TAM5. And here's a clip of Rebecca mentioning the first time that we ever met.
Oh. Yeah, I had actually never met Jay before.
Yeah.
That was my first meeting of Jay face to face. And it was, let me think
religious,
of a good adjective.
mind blowing. Transcendent?
Adequate. I guess.
Great. Oh, God. I just totally feel like I was standing nude in front of an audience.
That was harsh. That was harsh, old Rebecca.
Wow.
Young Rebecca.
Now,
the truth is harsh.
I remember, though, we had our first SGU dinner at that TAM, and Rebecca and I shared a warp core.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yes. Yes, I remember that.
And then I'm going to admit this now. I stole the glass that it came in, and I gave it to Rebecca.
That's right.
I was so drunk. It was literally like a gallon and a half of booze.
Yeah, it was a lot of booze. I have a picture somewhere of us drinking it.
Yes.
And Jay, you were caressing the orb somehow or hugging it at one point. I think you'd had a little too much.
And I
love that bar.
I have a wonderful picture of the first time me and Rebecca ever, you know, embraced. And then that night at Quark's, she and I were drunk together. It was just TAM5 to me was just one of the highlights of my life, to be honest with you. That convention was amazing. And Rebecca was a huge part of that. I was so excited and nervous to meet you. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm going to meet Rebecca in person. I was like talking about the whole way there.
Yeah, I was really excited too. And that was like our first, did we do a live show actually that year? Or did we just hang out? Was that our?
No, we didn't. We just hung out that first
year. We did interviews.
Oh my.
We did a bunch of interviews.
Yeah.
That's right. You sat down with us. You know, we interviewed Christopher Hitchens amongst others.
That's right.
You know, one of our more popular interviews.
That was a lot of fun, like getting to sit down and do parts of a show at least together. That was really awesome.
All right. So one of my favorite moments, though, I'm sitting there and I'm like, how do I encapsulate Rebecca on the show in a short enough time to get let the audience like understand how I feel? And I think I found one of my favorite sound bits where Rebecca just comes out swinging with her humor, and it also has something to do with Perry. So let me just play this for you.
Well, Ed and Lorraine Warren, I'll never forget when she looked at us with all the feeling in the world, and she said, "What happened to you boys? Was it the science thing?"
Is it the science?
She did. Is that science?
Oh, yeah.
Perry, show me on the doll where science touched you.
I feel like all of my best lines were with Perry.
Yeah, definitely. He was a perfect foil for you.
Yeah.
Well, he was that, you know, that was certainly the magic of, part of the magic of Perry, just one of his many great aspects. You can bounce any idea or thought off of him, and, you know, he just elevates the whole conversation. But hearing those clips between you and Perry certainly are some of the most precious memories that I have of the show.
Yeah.
Without question. And it was a really a wonderful time. And it evolved. It really did evolve even after Perry was gone. Like Jay was saying, we all sound, you know, it took a little while to sort of really get the soup to cook and the ingredients to blend. But once it all did, I think it really came together quite nicely. And it's just been a tremendous, tremendous trip, Rebecca. There's really not another way to put it.
Yeah. I completely agree.
When you think about it, think how much the skeptical movement has changed over the last 9 years. I've always felt like the five of us were just a rock that has been unmoved by all of it when you think about it.
Yeah.
And I get feedback about that too. People say like, you know, the SGU is just steady. It's just there. And that's partly was conscious, you know, that we wanted to be that sort of rock and not get blown about by what was happening in the movement.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, there was a lot of stuff going on in Rebecca's life, though, outside, you know, quite a bit of of drama and harassment and all that nonsense.
Well, initially, Jay, I don't know if you remember, initially, for the longest time, we would joke about how many marriage proposals Rebecca got through email. I mean, it was just like one proposal after the next. And
it was the flip side of the coin, really.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yep. It really was.
Hey, Rebecca, remember on iTunes when people would leave reviews, every other one would say, "Wow, we really love that Rachel has come on to the show."
Yeah. Rachel. Oh, my God.
Not once or twice.
Constantly.
It was about 19 times.
Yes. Constantly.
And
I would always clip them and send them to you, Rebecca, and say, "Hey, Rachel, here's another compliment."
And there's this one time I went on the SGU forums and was reading something about the most recent episode, and somebody was like, "Yeah, and Rachel said blah, blah, blah." And then someone else responded, "Well, I think Rachel was in the right there," and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, holy crap, what is wrong with you people? You're like in my forum talking about me and you can't get my goddamn name right. And then I realized it was April Fool's Day, and the forum manager had changed every instance of the word Rebecca to autocorrect to Rachel.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
And I fell for a hook line. I was like, seriously, it was like the final straw. Like, how dare you?
Good stuff.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Well, but the SGU will go on, and this episode's going to go on.
Yeah.
We're going to go on to the best and worst of 2014, and we'll cycle back, Rebecca, to talking about you and the show and everything. But let's get through some of the usual looking back that we do. Yeah. So best and worst of 2014, the usual categories that we do. Let's start just by talking about the SGU itself. Favorite episode, favorite interview, favorite moment. What do you guys remember? What sticks out for you from the show this last year?
We've said it before. We've had lots of fantastic interviews, but the one that just made me giddy was James Marsters. I have to say it again. I loved Spike on Buffy. He did a little opening quote for us and as Spike, which just tickled me so much. And we just love the guy. And what really made it extra, extra special was not that here was this guy that's this famous guy, but he also was a complete science geek, which I don't think any of us really knew. And not only was a geek, he claimed to actually listen to the show. And that just was such the icing on the cake. So for me, that is at the absolute most memorable interview that we did, among lots of fantastic interviews, but that one really is at the top of the heap for me.
Yeah, ditto. If we set aside James Marsters, I always love having Paul Offit on.
Yeah.
And he was he did like a whole guest rogue thing this year, and I thought he did a fantastic job. He's very, very intelligent, very, very dry. He has a really good sense of humor hiding beneath a rather dry exterior, which I like.
He's a good storyteller as well.
Yeah.
And he's a good sport. He played along with anything we threw at him.
Yeah.
Right. We have a video coming out with him that you won't believe. Jay and I are like, God, are we going to be able to get Paul to do this? He did anything we asked him to do. It's almost like it became a contest. What can we ask this guy to do and see if he'll do it?
Hey, Paul, eat this. don't look at it. Eat it.
It's hard to pick, you know, and there's people that we've interviewed before that we re-interviewed this year. I love every time I get to talk to Bill Nye. He's amazingly inspiring. Mm-hmm. And he also just makes you feel like he's your neighbor. He lives next door to you and you have access to him. You know, he doesn't have that vibe. Like, he's approachable and he's a wonderful person. And then, you know, meeting his counterpart in Australia, Dr. Carl. I never met Dr. Carl before, and we interviewed him, and I spent a lot of time with him at TAM this year. We did shot a lot of video with him, interviewed
him.
Gave
Jay some sex advice.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah, guy is so on tap knowledge. Like, he just can talk
on tap.
About
that's
anything.
That's a perfect term for him. He's always on tap. Yeah,
and
absolutely.
The other thing I noticed about him was whenever I talked with him, it could have been at 7 in the morning or at 11 o'clock at night, he comes at everything with the same level of energy and fervor, you know? He didn't get tired. He just kept going and talking and making me just want to stand there and listen to him.
He's
loved.
The Energizer Bunny.
He is.
Yeah, Steve, you did
an Australian accent.
Steve did that crazy like day with him, right?
Like, yeah,
day
like
in the life of Dr. Carl.
It was
7 interviews.
Thanksgiving actually in Sydney, and I spent the entire day following Dr. Carl around from radio show to radio show, which is his typical Thursday. And again, he was just endless. We would literally have like. We would get to the next studio. We would have 1 minute before the next show started, and boom, we're just firing away with science questions. And he just always had something to say. It was a lot of fun. And the day blew by. It went by so fast. At one point, we were sitting down. I'm like, are we having lunch now? Like, I just totally lost track of what was happening. what part of the day it was. It was a lot. It was funny.
And I have another one. I just want to mention, we interviewed Randy at TAM with Massimo.
With Massimo.
Yeah.
Massimo Polidoro.
Yeah, yeah. All right. Well, Massimo's working on a project with Randy, and there was a lot of old Randy stories that I had never heard before, in particular one about Randy pulling a stunt off in a real prison cell where he escaped from. And just hearing Randy go through that was amazing to me, and you know, watching him unfold the story again and, you know, his enthusiasm about something that happened to him, you know, 20, 25 years ago. It was really awesome.
Yeah, speaking of books, we had Jennifer Ouellette join us because she had come out with a book, Me, Myself, and Why, which was a real fun book to read. And we talked about a lot of existential sorts of things, which took the show, I think, in a different direction. Yeah. And I really enjoyed that interview.
And her acid trip, which was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, yes.
That's great.
Her monitored acid trip. Thank goodness for Sean Carroll.
Right. All right, guys, let's talk about the jackass of the year.
Oh, boy.
There can be only one, Steve. Let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah.
Look at my list. There are pages.
Such an obvious. I'm not even going to pretend.
One is really a standout.
Yeah, let's talk about the standout. All right, everyone in our audience listening to this right now, please pick who you think the jackass of the year is. The science illiterate, void of critical thinking, jackass of the year.
Well, can I read? We got an email from Craig Good. Craig Good is our friend, formerly of Pixar, but now he's just out there doing other stuff.
Master of all awesome things. Go ahead. Yeah, what did Craig say?
Craig wrote about this category. Is there really any contest this year? For sheer ignorance, hubris, and economic damage, this is the food bimbo's year.
I have to
agree. The food babe. This was her breakout year.
I disagree with calling
nonsense.
Her a bimbo because I think that does a disservice to bimbos everywhere.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah.
And it's also an insult to food to have it in the same category as her, the word food.
You know, I tried to encapsulate her in one sentence. This is something I just threw together. I said, she's a perfect storm in terms of effective fear-mongering coupled with a profound lack of scientific knowledge and fact-checking skills.
I would throw in self-promotion.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, why not?
Throw that in there.
Even her good information is bad.
It's, yeah, she's terrible. Absolutely terrible. I also had to give a runners up to Dr. Tobinick because he's suing me.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Kind of earned you a spot, right. You know, and not just me. It's not all about me. It's if you sue a skeptic for just spreading critical thinking and skepticism, then you're on the list. Anyone who does that gets themselves, you know,
oh, you just made the list, buddy. Yeah.
So those are my two for
well,
the year.
Speaking of lists, was it Mercola that did the GMO list?
No.
Nazi?
No.
Who was that?
Mike Adams.
Mike Adams.
He made my list. Yes,
he needs special attention because I threw him in the category of most outrageous illogical statement or pseudoscientific claim. He's my number one for that one.
Yeah, like, I agree.
This guy's dangerous.
That is like, wow. And he was really, you know, what the Food Babe did steadily throughout the year, he did in one brief period.
No, but he does that steadily too, Bob. Don't.
I know. But he had a spike. He had this one spike that was just like, I mean, come on, threatening to put together a list of people that should be killed and then making that list then blaming.
That's right.
I forget. It's a whole thing.
And then trying to blame somebody else for
yes,
it. Yeah.
Yes.
That's right. He said it was, the collaborator side. I had nothing to do with it. But guess what? A little research shows that Adams was behind it. Yeah. Hey.
Amazing.
Caught.
Yeah, I agree. Jerk. You know,
I wouldn't be afraid of my life. I'm not afraid for my life with the Food Babe, but I could see how some people would be, seriously afraid of this guy. And that's a whole other level.
Yeah.
That is true.
In my opinion.
Yeah, I'd rather run into the Food Babe at 3 a.m, you know?
Yeah, honorable mention, Alicia Silverstone gets the Jenny McCarthy Award for the year for her book, The Kind Mama, in which she correlates interesting things like tampon use with infertility, and certainly, you know, she's anti-vaccination all over the place. So, and I'll also say, how about PETA and autism? Their milk comments. Not good. PETA, come on.
What about Gail?
Gail?
Yeah.
Gail who?
Never mind. PETA, Gail.
What's that?
Come on, people.
Which show?
Wait, is this a Hunger Games joke?
Yeah.
Oh, is it Hunger Games? Yes. Oh, God.
Sorry, Steve, that I'm an adult and I read adult books. So,
my daughter insisted I read it. Okay,
sure.
Yeah.
You know, there are movies out you can watch.
Insisted you read it cover to cover, memorize their names, and pick Team PETA or Team Gail.
All right, so this was tougher for me. Who would you say is the skeptic of the year?
I spent a lot of time thinking about it. I just don't think there was any distinct standouts.
I mean, what about the UK skeptics going after that horrible psychic lady and making her fire her horrible?
Absolutely, Mark Tilbrook, definitely. Mm-hmm. The Sally Morgan incident, no doubt about it, made my list. That he, you know, had to stand up to legal threats, to physical threats, among other things, and he was sort of out there on his own at first, at least, brunting this these kinds of threats by psychic Sally Morgan. Only because he was trying to, you know, spread some information and knowledge about what actually goes on at one of her typical performances. So, good for him for, you know, being not just an activist, but also having to stand up to some pretty significant threats.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that this year there definitely were a lot of, skeptics who were doing really good activism that were either focusing on one topic or whatever, and did a really great job. So they weren't the typical famous skeptics doing big things. They were workaday activist skeptics doing really good work. And I just think collectively, I would elect as quote unquote skeptic of the year all of the activist skeptics who did good work this year.
So you're taking like the Time Magazine Person of the Year.
Kind of. Sort
it's
of.
You.
Putting a mirror on the front cover. It's you. Hey, stay classy.
How about Senator Claire McCaskill, who gave Dr. Oz a dressing down in front of a Senate subcommittee on consumer protection for making misleading weight loss claims? She nailed him to the cross, and his year just kept getting worse after that. And most recently, that resulted in the BMJ publishing a study looking at all of the claims he made last year, well, in like 80 or 40 different shows or something like that, 40 shows, I think, and determining that less than 50% of the claims he made actually had any basis in fact, had any evidence behind them.
I'm surprised it was that
high. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but that was even using a very low standard. If there was a single case report, that counted as evidence. If you want to say like really good evidence, the small minority of the recommendations that he's making actually are backed by really good evidence. Less than half by any evidence, which means more than half were completely baseless.
Yeah, it's really has not been his year, and that just tickles me pink. One quick quote from McCaskill. She said to him, "The scientific community is almost monolithic against you in terms of the efficacy of the three products you call miracles." And just the expression on his face when that was going on, and what happened just most recently with this you know, the assessment of his claims. It's just, wow. It's just, I didn't think that, you know, it would come, but they really are lining up against him, and it's fantastic.
Yep.
Yeah, I want to mention a couple things. I think, you know, we come down harsh on the media. We're pretty stern, and that's kind of been something we've been, I think, consistent with over the coming up on 10 full years now that we've been doing this, is that we take the media to task when they're wrong, but they also should get credit when they do good work. Mm-hmm. And I think when the BBC ditched their any sort of false balance
standard,
their reporters were, living up to, and they essentially enacted this new policy saying that not all ideas have equal merit and deserve equal time. I thought that was a very good, positive, movement forward, especially by a major media organization like the BBC. So credit where credit is deserved. And also I'll mention Pando Daily, which I found to be a very useful website. And Steve, you blogged, and I think we talked on the show earlier in the year about crowdfunding. And how so many slippery products and things get into, Indiegogo and Kickstarter and these other things, which kind of also became sort of a theme of 2014. And Pando Daily did a really good job of sort of uncovering, going into the deep weeds on a few of these companies and exposing them for exactly who they are and what they were trying to do. So good job to Pando Daily.
Yeah, there definitely are occasional good, really good, just general science reporting, even very skeptical, critical thinking science reporting in the mainstream media. I think in retrospect, I think it's worth mentioning Bill Nye's debate with Ken Ham.
Yes, it's on my list as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he did a good job and it was a net positive, all things considered.
Yeah, which could have turned out to really be disastrous because we've seen it turn disastrous in the past with other debaters and people from the skeptic movement and science trying to go into an arena like that and coming out really bad on the other side. But you're right, Steve. It turned out to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Let's move on a little bit to just favorite episodes, favorite moments from the SGU. We did get some votes from the outside. Let me maybe just mention the ones that got mentioned. From episode 444... science or fiction riff on Tall Whites. You guys remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Not at all.
No.
I remember that.
Really episode 447, the comment, put yourself in Satan's hooves. That sounds like a Rebecca-ism.
Is that amazing?
Yeah, I would guess.
I'll take it.
And then... Well, there's a vote for the best Who's That Noisy, which we could talk about separately. But the I agree with this one. I listened back to it. The turtle coitus.
Yes. Oh, no God. Question. No question.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Well, at a very high level, for me, the two episodes stand out. And the content of the episodes is almost irrelevant, which is ironic. But the Sydney and the New Zealand shows, for me, were just so much fun. Just from the pure venue alone, they were just so fantastic and had so much fun.
From the Sydney private show, which is our show this week, I remember because I was just editing it last week, the clown sex riff was really funny. And we did get a listener vote for similar... when we riffed on Jay's flatulence. Do you remember that from episode 443?
Oh, we still, yeah.
But when are we not talking
still
about
talking
yeah,
about that
like
one.
That doesn't ring a bell only because it's so common.
Narrow it down.
Episodes 440 through 489.
Our private show in Australia, when I was talking about the news item about putting DNA on the outside of a rocket.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was good, too.
Yeah, I had a couple of people write in that were just saying that they were laughing out loud at work or whatever. And it's really, that was one hell of a show for me because we were all completely exhausted.
That was
oh my
so
God.
Tiring.
So, it was exhausting.
Yeah, our guard was completely down and we were just going for it.
Yeah.
So I love that moment, I think, out of the whole year.
All right, guys, here's my favorite episode. And as you know, I always love the live episodes, obviously. Dragon Con we did again this year, which was a really fun episode as well. But for me personally, it was episode 467. This happened on June 21st. And here's the lineup. Here are all the things we talked about. And I had so much fun with all these things. First of all, we started the show with a group hug, an internet hug, which I think was great. Second of all, it's happening on June 21st, which is the summer solstice. So we talked about that. Really cool. We did the Cosmos review. Cosmos was really one of the big things that happened in 2014, you know, this epic miniseries again relaunched, and it was great to sort of relive that as well. Also in that episode, we talked about the Deepak Chopra challenge, which was, you know, a lot of fun and made a lot of fun of that. The Dr. Oz segment, Rebecca, you know, we spoke about that. Claire McCaskill and what a great job she did there. Bob, you talked about the machine, with the new architecture that they've developed. That was a lot of fun as we were making fun of the fact that they couldn't come up with anything better than the machine.
Yeah, I remember the whole, we interviewed the dentist and I was really going off on teeth. That actually was a lot of fun. And I did get to interface with a lot of people over email about that.
That was my least favorite episode because I still have trouble like deciding whether or not to floss. Like we did not come to a solid decision on that.
I thought about it, Rebecca. I have the answer. First of all, you should floss anyway because if anything, it'll help your bad breath if you have bad breath because you have rotting food in between your teeth. So long term, sure. Maybe the jury is still out on whether or not it has a long term effect on cavities or not, but your breath on a daily basis is very important. So freaking floss.
Okay. I saw a really great ad while we were in, I think it was when we were in Sydney, for mouthwash, and it said brushing your teeth misses 75% of your mouth. And then there's an asterisk. And at the bottom, the asterisk said, your teeth comprise approximately 25% of your mouth. I thought it was brilliant. It was in tiny print at the bottom.
That is awesome.
Very cool.
So guys, we have two clips. Fred Bremer did sort of a best of 2014 clip. That we're going to play. Yeah, and then Jason Ferber sent us a mashup. He does one of an individual rogue each year, and this year he completed his set by doing Bob.
Yay! So finally,
let's listen to those two mashups of the SGU and then and enjoy. Here we go.
And boy, does it squirt. I predict Jay will become sentient. But so far, you're losing. So I say, read a damn science book. Climate is different from weather. Hello? Stephen Hawking says there are no black holes. He's going to screw us on this. So therefore, say the alligator, crocodile.
When I first read it, I thought the baby was the result of a threesome.
What? What are you chuckling at, Rebecca?
Back into the front.
But it kind of makes sense, and more sense than a pepper tree ever did. Hold on to your cerebrums.
So every time I blow my nose, am I calculating pi?
And eyes themselves are really just little pieces of our brain that are just kind of like poking out of our head anyway. Also, in animals that produce a lot of methane, like cattle and jay.
How many people here love quarks?
I just had a joint on me, and I'm in jail next to this guy who is winking at me. I don't know.
It's too ridiculous to be false.
I know literally everything about the solar system except these three things.
Isn't it pronunciation?
I'm just going to call it Tyrion.
I will kill him!
Join us.
It says multiverse right in the Bible.
Holy crap. Technically, you're right, and if it's true, I'm going to kill you.
Wink Martindale!
But 10 inches, I got some major tingling going on.
That would change the face of porn.
I hate being smart.
I drove 2 hours north, and I saw shit. Wait a second, did I say more cooler? Oh, crap. Hello? That's the holy grail of physics. When did it change from Sacagawea to Sacagawea? Spectroscopy.
A stuffed animal orgy.
I don't think you can add a layer to this to make it more wrong.
That's what they want you to think.
I'm not even paying attention. Double crap!
That was the Bob mashup by Jason Farber. Now let's listen to Fred Bremer's summary of 2014. The information one was the big one. That was the black hole wars, right? Where Hawking said, oh, if, you know, you guys are right, then information is lost from the universe, which is impossible. Nah, nah. Yeah.
The black hole wars sounds a lot more exciting than it actually
was. Awesome.
I think it's exciting.
It was exciting, Rebecca. It was.
All right.
Sweetie.
No lives were lost in the black hole wars.
But a few were spaghettified, though.
Back by popular demand, we have last week's Who's That Noisy?
Oh my god. Knowing what it is very funny.
Yeah.
Go to YouTube and watch the video for it, and you watch the expressions of the turtles, both the male turtle and the female turtle during coitus. It is absolutely hilarious. It's laugh out loud funny. Lots of right answers. Just about as many correct answers as there were from the week prior with Oliver Stone. So that's a credit to our listening audience, frankly, if you ask me.
I hope this week is Oliver Stone having sex.
Gosh.
Back into the right.
Essentially, it's leftover code, you know, that was taken over by other genes, or maybe some of it's just old code from viruses.
It's an older code, but it checks out.
That's awesome. Nice one.
James, before we end, give us a little spike.
No, I don't do that anymore. I've moved on with my life, for God's sake. Bloody hell.
So, James Marsters, a.k.a. Spike, thank you so much for joining us on The Skeptic's Guide. It's really been a lot of fun.
I've had a fabulous time. I like hanging out with people who are a lot smarter than I am.
And yet, oh you gosh. Like this.
Yeah. I feel the same way you do. That's why I hang out with Steve. So,
all right.
They found that there were three basic guidelines that govern the time and place. So, like, when do ants just finally decide we're going to build our home here? The three guidelines or laws, if you want to call it. One is an ant must not harm a human or allow a human to come to harm.
Wait, Jay.
What?
Are those robot ants? I think you mixed up your Asimov.
Right. I couldn't help myself. The second one is the first rule of ant colony building is that you don't talk about ant colony building.
Yeah, that's Fight Club, Jay.
Okay. The third one is all ants must put the lotion in the basket. They do that whenever they're told.
Oh, no.
He went there.
Don't you hurt my dog.
No.
All right, I got the real ones.
This methanogen is found in a lot of places today, like in oil and sewage, also in animals that produce a lot of methane, like cattle and jay. So to support his idea, the scientist did a deep dive.
Thanks, Rebecca.
I thought that was very funny. I don't know.
I don't get many good chuckles from her, Jay. Just give it to me.
So, Bob, what you're saying is that bacteria producing methane can be deadly. No, I just want to know how careful I need to be hanging around Jay.
Yeah, I mean, Bob, seriously, can you kill yourself with your own farts?
Tell us about the dangers of Dutch ovens.
and open flames.
Oh, man.
Okay.
Were these bacteria silent but deadly?
Oh, God.
Okay.
Last week's Who's That Noisy? Here we go.
Oh, yeah. That sounds like a Tasmanian devil.
Yes. That was the most popular guess by far. By far, that was the most popular guess. It also happened to be the wrong guess. That was, in fact, an alpaca. A male alpaca, in the act of procreation with a female alpaca. And that is
doing it.
That is the distinct noise that they make. And how do I know that it's distinct? Well,
because you fucked an alpaca.
That's great. Very nice, Steve.
See, that's the funniest thing you've ever said.
What about sea anemones?
Anemones?
I can never say that word.
Sea anemone.
I call them sea enemies.
My sea allies.
Anemones are my arch nemesis.
the anemones of my anemones are my.
I always think of that joke with Franz like this. Who needs anemone?
is that a joke?
Oh my god!
That's some sort of sick joke.
That was a 3-second delay joke for me.
Crab eating macaques typically do not consume crabs. They are opportunistic omnivores.
Okay, so
it's amazing how many animals their names are misnomers, you know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Like the jumbo shrimp.
The jumbo. Exactly. Like the, the koala bear is not a bear.
Oh, right.
Right. Yes. The Tasmanian devil is actually a demon. I don't know if you were aware of that.
Oh, okay. There's that.
I thought it was just a minor demon. Yeah. That's a good one.
The sun bear is not actually a sun.
The cockatoo is not a, well...
Yeah, it kind of speaks for itself.
Yeah. It only has one.
The sloth is actually my ex-wife, so go and figure.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Hey, how you doing out there?
Like jellyfish are not fish.
Oh, yeah. Starfish, not stars.
Also,
I mean, not fish.
Also not a fish.
The Holy Roman Empire was neither holy nor Roman nor an empire.
Yeah, not an animal either, but that's okay.
The sucker-footed bat is not a sucker. They're pretty damn smart. You know, take good care of your teeth, and then, in the future, if you get any new cavities, they can pull this device out and stimulate your tooth, and it'll repair it for you.
But you said it can't handle, a big cavity?
Well, it can't handle a really big, giant hole that's in your tooth.
You're saying it can't handle the tooth.
It can't handle the tooth.
God. Oh,
yes. Thank you, Steve.
And Bob's right. That Hooray. Wacky quantum mechanics can do anything. Apparently.
Almost.
Very
it's
cool.
Deus ex machina of science or fiction.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So what the scientists did was they used a neutron interferometer. Have you heard of that, Bob?
Yeah.
Yeah, you take a beam of neutrons, you split them into two paths. Or the neutrons could basically take one of two paths.
The two paths, I know.
Right?
And, you actually described it pretty well, Steve. So taking that to the next step, though. When you decouple these power converters,
yeah.
Right, and you cross-phase them through the actual, with the early Java converter-type systems, what you get is a semi-cross parallax parallelization of the comatose crematores.
Yeah. Did you get the power converters at Tashi Station?
Fish, of course, it's easy to see. Huge groups of fish swimming in coordination.
Schools.
Mm-hmm. Rebecca just schooled you, Jay.
Good one, Steve.
Essentially, it took out his left frontal lobe and his left eye. His left eye was gone. Left frontal lobe basically destroyed.
So there's a nanosecond lobotomy is what it was.
Yeah, although it's not really a lobotomy because lobotomies are... as a surgical procedure is much more precise and would have
effect. No shit, Steve.
Yeah, but it would have a completely different effect.
No, you see, Bob, a lobotomy is often performed in a surgical environment. This was a tamping rod driving through the skull.
It's like saying Kennedy had a lobotomy.
I'm happy to go first. Okay, so astronomers have... They've discovered...
Did you say astronomers?
Astronomers! Awesome!
You could rip off a limb or a tail, and they could still survive. They've got amazing immune systems.
They said that about the crocodile in Peter Pan. He takes a licking and keeps on ticking.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy.
My wife and I had to bring one of our children to a physician. The first meeting, they were flirting with the nonsense, and I started pushing back. And my wife's like, don't be rude, and let's give her a chance, and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, fine, I'll keep my mouth shut next time, and we'll just give her a chance. And then the next time, the floodgates of woo opened, and then we left that meeting, and the wife's like, oh, God, you were right. That was a complete waste of time. Total and utter
Steve,
waste
how
of time.
The hell did you not go apeshit on that? I mean, that poor doctor had no idea who the hell was in his office.
No, it's true. It's true.
Oh, my God.
So
Chuck Norris of skepticism.
Yeah.
That decision says... is we don't need any educated information about science.
And we don't need no education.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah.
I thought it was just going to be 3 minutes of the word nano. Nano. Nano.
Nano, nano. Nano.
Maybe that can be next year. Nano.
It is funny because they're all so out of context. Like, what could Bob possibly have been talking about?
Yes.
There?
Yeah.
Whereas with Fred's mashup, you get more of the whole segment, so it's an interesting contrast there. But very funny. So thanks, guys.
Thank you, Fred. Thank you, Jason. That was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
Well, let's turn to science in 2014. Look back over some of the good science news stories, the not so good science news stories. Maybe give a little follow up There was a lot of space exploration news in 2014. A lot of stuff happened.
Yeah, I mean, I can give you some stats on how the year went, but this was a fantastic year for space travel because we're seeing a lot of testing and a lot of other companies now in the private sectors getting involved, which is exactly what we want, because that's, you know, the more commercialized, in my opinion, space travel becomes, the more access the rest of the world will have to it, the more launches we'll have, the more people in outer space. You know, we want this to become like flying in a jet. You know, everyone can do it, and it's cost effective. So during the first mission went up on January 5th, there was a total of 87 missions last year that were worth talking about, and 83 of them were successes. Two failures and two partial failures. So out of these...
Not bad. You know,
yeah, it's actually very good.
I mean, it's not airline travel, though, Jay. We're not there yet.
Close. Yeah. I mean, we're doing... There's probably hundreds of jets taking off every hour. But, you know, the cost and the danger and all that stuff. But we're seeing, you know, different kinds of vehicles being created. You know, we have Virgin Galactic's vehicle, which I think is really cool. I mean, that seems to be something just based on getting people in the, you know, upper atmosphere. But it's just a cool project that is being worked on.
Well, that's one of the ones, Virgin Galactic Spaceship 2 is one of the ones that exploded.
That's right. Yeah, but, you know, this is what's going to happen. We're testing all these things.
Yeah.
Some amazing stuff going on where we have, you know, new command modules being developed by multiple companies. You know, we have trips to the International Space Station happening, you know, by companies in the private sector. You know, we also have on the drawing boards for future development, you know, even though you could be very skeptical about some of these, but missions to Mars are being discussed and being funded. You know, there's a lot of things being funded by the public that you'd never imagine 20 years ago that this type of activity is happening. So I just think moving forward, we're going to see a lot of incredible things coming from the private sector, like in the next to 10 years.
Some highlights for me were a lot of the international projects, like the Indian Space Research Organization sent a probe to Mars, like really inexpensively. Japan sent Hayabusa 2 probe to an asteroid. China sent the U-2 or Jade Rabbit to the moon. And the European Space Agency sent the Rosetta 2 probe to Comet 67P.
That was huge.
That was huge.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
That was probably my pick for science story of the year.
Mine too, yeah.
Although it's hard to say because, you know, it's recent in mind, so maybe.
Right.
I'm just, you know.
No, it was significant. I mean, it was a long journey. I mean, it took forever to get there and, you know, a lot had to go right, certainly. It had to.
Mm-hmm.
It just the incredible amount of moving parts to this puzzle of a mission. Was incredible. And the fact that they did get it to actually land, albeit a little crooked and they lost power with it. But other than that, the thing was just an incredibly successful mission that unfolded over a 10-year period.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. If you watch the path of the ship from the moment it took off from the Earth and how it was being assisted by multiple planets in their gravity and all of that activity, it's really impressive that we could calculate those things and be that accurate.
And then during the celebration and the interviews and so forth, we wound up with the unfortunate Shirtgate scandal with the scientists wearing the shirt, which ironically sort of grabbed the lion's share of attention in news reporting at the end and towards the end of the climax of the whole thing. So a little feminism found its way into this particular major science story as well.
Well, and that's been, you know, probably, you know, the biggest story in science this year has, you know, not been a scientific discovery, but I think the growing movement of women who are speaking up about the position of women in science and how we're making it better and how we're making it worse. And that came, you know, Matt Taylor's shirt came at a time when, you know, that was reaching its apex, I think.
Yeah.
So, really, that's why people, you know, jumped on that as a really obvious example of, hey, here's a way that, you know, some people are quite ignorantly impeding women's progress in the sciences, you know, without even realizing it. So, yeah, I think the, you know, ripples of doubt and other stories of, you know, women that women are bringing up on Twitter and other social media, women who work in the sciences, that stuff has been huge this year. And that's probably, I think, like the biggest thing that's been happening in the sciences as like one large conversation that's ongoing.
Yeah. It's like almost like we're at a tipping point, you know, where it's like suddenly no longer acceptable to be sexist in scientific circles, which is, of course, fantastic. Right. I think, you know, Cosmos added to it, you know, just Neil deGrasse Tyson, you know, in one episode, and more than one episode, actually, but there was one in particular where he was talking about a lot of female scientists who made very significant contributions and said, you've and probably never heard of any of these women, of any of these scientists. I wonder why that is. You know, he just made a very eloquent point about the fact that women have been contributing to the sciences, but just over, you know, we're lacking in female science role models, partly because they've just been ignored. And, but their contributions are there for anyone to see, you know?
Yeah. That was a great episode too.
But yeah, and that's one of the nice things about the world that we're living in right now is that through social media and other ways, there are so many awesome female scientists who are stepping up and are becoming really amazing communicators of science at the same time as being really great role models for other women who are interested in pursuing a career in the sciences.
I have a vote for what I think was one of the most significant science news items of the year. Also, one of the most surprising to me. And that was the olfactory stem cells that were used to treat spinal cord paralysis.
Yeah.
That was one of like, when I first read like, oh, this is being overhyped, you know, that I read into it, like, no, this actually happened. Yeah. This is essentially they harvested, these types of cells that are, you know, the nose constantly is regenerating itself. You know, the neural cells, which are involved with the sense of smell. And, scientists were able to use those, cells to, regenerate a damaged part of a spinal cord. They tested four patients and I think two of them had a pretty good response, you know, to the treatment. It's not a cure, but it was, you know, a significant step, I think. And it shows the potential for this kind of neurological recovery. So to me, that was surprising in a very, very good way.
That was one of those, like, we're living in the future type of scientific discoveries.
Yeah.
Not quite happening.
Yeah, not quite there yet, but that was like, wow, we were starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel here.
Yeah.
You guys have any other votes for some cool science news for the year?
Yeah, for me, all the ones you guys mentioned are great. A couple other ones that I threw on my list. The gravitational waves from the Big Bang was big. Unfortunately, there has been a kind of a rug thrown on top of it. There's some doubt now that that some of their methodology was suspect and needs to be reevaluated. And I'm really hoping that this does turn out to be a real discovery. Really help us, you know, peer at the earliest, tiniest slivers of a second after the Big Bang and really learn things that we can never learn otherwise. So I really hope that that pans out. So that's still kind of an if thing now. Another one I mentioned on the show was a new process for creating these little micro-architectured nanostructures that are incredibly light and incredibly strong that I think could cause a revolution in material science. From the construction of rockets and spaceships to cars, if this pans out, and it looks pretty fantastic, and it looks like it's really there. There's really not too much doubt about it. I think we could see a huge impact in material science, which, as you know, impacts almost everything. So those are some big stories that really caught my interest this year.
I like when science can be elegant and sort of simple in a sense, in which, you know, little simple experiments are done that yield some pretty big results. Remember the potato chip bag and the visual microphone?
That we talked about.
That was awesome. I forgot about that.
So the filming of the vibrations of the bag of potato chips. And that's right. And the scientists can create and recreate the ambient sound. That's amazing that they can measure that. So that got an honorable mention for me. The FDA also approved their first powered exoskeleton. Very cool. And for those of you who saw the movie Elysium, you'll kind of get a sense for what that was all about. So FDA approves that. Very cool. It's $70,000 right now, so it's not exactly affordable for everyone and anyone who needs it, but, that technology is not even 5 to 10 years away. Thank you. We're ready for that one. And finally, scientists solved the riddle of the sailing stones of Death Valley.
Oh, yeah.
In which the edges of the ice were
finally
so long. Finally, after 70, 90 years of wandering. Yeah. So, I like those little ones that, to me, deserved a little honorable mention. So there you have it.
Let me just run through some of the other stuff, just science in 2014 that's worth mentioning. We're still in the midst of a spasm of exoplanet discoveries. Kepler confirmed 715 new exoplanets, including an Earth-sized planet in the habitable zone. The MAVEN mission to Mars is starting to send back loads of data about the Martian atmosphere.
MAVEN.
This year we discovered that, confirmed that Neanderthal DNA exists in humans, so that we have some Neanderthal in all of us. And the first instance of possible Homo erectus art. Bob mentioned Bicep 2, which is a huge story, which would then lost some of its steam later in the year. So along similar lines, we discovered this year, you guys remember the Mississippi baby? This is a baby that was thought to be cured of HIV by early aggressive treatment.
Oh, that's and right.
Unfortunately, this year it was discovered that they have measurable amounts of HIV, so it was not eradicated. So that was unfortunate. Stem cell boom and bust as well. The Riken Center for Development Biology in Kobe, Japan announced an easy way to make stem cells, later exposed as fraud. And just recently, the scientist resigned in disgrace.
And one of them, Steve, one of the scientists killed themselves.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, one of the
that was earlier.
It happened in August as all this was sort of still unfolding. It took sort of a whole year for it to come to its conclusion. But in August, one of the co-authors of one of the two studies, unfortunately, and it killed himself in disgrace of what had happened. It's really sad.
And Bob, I thought you would have mentioned this one. The synthetic chromosome of yeast was done this year. This is, it was not a whole yeast. It was just one chromosome, but this is, that was a significant step forward in synthetic biology, which I know is something you're really interested in.
Yes. Yep. That was definitely on my list as well.
This year, 6 vials of smallpox were found in a lab refrigerator.
I'm so thirsty. What's in here?
Yeah, in the break room.
Clink, clink, clink. Glug, 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 glug.
Raising questions about whether or not we should be keeping vials of smallpox hanging around.
As long as they're labeled correctly.
Seriously, like really? Like how can that happen? And the answer to your question is no, we shouldn't. Like they laying around, they should be in a freezer somewhere in a bunker, right?
Well, certainly not in a lab refrigerator.
They found them in a Gatorade jug.
The big, big science news story of 2014 was Ebola, the worst outbreak of Ebola ever, more deaths than every other Ebola outbreak previously, and spawning a lot of research where, I've been reading about efforts to develop an Ebola vaccine as well as effective treatments over the last 6 months. Nothing on the market yet, but looks like things are moving forward pretty quickly. We'll probably see one soon.
And of course, with that story comes the negative. Well, it's negative to begin with, but the even worse side of it, in which the homeopaths tried to show up and peddle their water to people, and also some witch doctors and other sorts of characters emerged. Faith healers and others claiming that they could do some good.
That's a good point, Evan. So as a late honorable mention for Skeptical Jackass of the Year is all the homeopaths who were trying to push their homeopathic Ebola treatments on the world.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Bastards.
Does anybody have a nominee for the worst science fail of the year? Obviously, I wouldn't have brought up the category. All right.
Why don't you just go?
I'll start with mine. You guys can think of any. The AWARE near-death experience study was the worst science of the year.
Oh, that's right.
That was horrible.
It was much anticipated. It was a complete bust, and then the authors tried to spin it as if it actually meant something when it was just complete and utter nonsense. So they were trying to capture verified out-of-body experiences during a near-death experience where they were reading a hidden card with a word on it, and nobody did, but they just included the usual stories, months, a year later about, a typical near-death experience as if it were evidence. Utter, complete failure, in my opinion.
And Steve, I'd like to also hinge on to that by saying that your debate with your partner, Sean Carroll, in the Death Is Not Final debate was certainly one of the highlights of the skeptical year for me. It was really wonderful to see you guys pull apart those other folks like a feather pillow.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
It was.
Steve, here's one that I kind of made note of that I don't know if this isn't a science fail, but it certainly is a fail. Do you remember that saint, that Baba Ashutosh Maharaj?
Oh, the guy.
He's got tons of followers. He
alive,
or
was he just meditating?
He had a heart attack 11 years ago, died. And his followers are claiming that he is in this higher level of state of consciousness, samadhi, and his followers put his body on ice when they notice telltale signs of decay. They put him on ice so that they can preserve his body for when he comes back. And meanwhile, doctors, police, and courts have all said this guy is dead. These people are saying he's not dead. You would think it would be easy, you know, to decide one way or the other, which it is. And, but of course it's complicated by a huge, this guy's got a huge estate. Millions and millions of dollars, and they're, you know, and so there's that's at stake, and that is playing into it, I think. But still, it's just like, wow, people are saying he's dead, some are saying he's not, and it's like, what, really? You can't decide? All right, it's just an interesting thing that has not been. I researched it. It has not. He's still on ice. He's been on ice for
he's
many
still
months
dead,
now.
Man.
He's still
dead. Yeah.
Okay, Evan.
Oh, Steve.
We're gonna do the Who's That Noisy winner for 2014.
That's right. Here we go. Everyone ready?
Yes.
I know you've been waiting. So what we did is we took all the winners from the year 2014 each week from Who's That Noisy, and we put their names into a hat.
A virtual hat. Or is it a real hat?
Oh, it was a hat.
Okay.
It's like it was Abraham Lincoln's stovetop hat, in fact.
Got it.
I'll get it back to the museum tomorrow. My daughter dug her hand in there, reached around, fished around, took a good few seconds, and pulled out a name. And the name was listener Abigail Drum.
Yay. Abigail, congratulations.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Congrats, Abigail.
So, Evan, tell her what she's won.
Well, Steve, Abigail will be joining us in the coming weeks to participate in the game called Science or Fiction. She will be playing with and or against the other rogues. So congratulations, Abigail Drum.
All right. Well, thanks, Evan. Congratulations again, Abigail. So we'll look forward to you early in January for Science or Fiction. Okay, so next segment, we're going to talk about In Memoriam. So these are people that we lost over 2014. Rebecca, there was really only one prominent skeptic that I'm aware of who died in 2014, and that was your friend Victor Stenger.
Yeah, Vic, who wrote God, the Failed Hypothesis, amongst many others. He was such an awesome guy. He will be greatly missed.
Let's talk about some scientists who passed away this year. Do any of you know who Willy Bergdorfer is?
Was?
I would remember that name, I would think.
See, any physician would instantly know who this is because he had a bacteria named after him, Borrelia bergdorferi, which is the spirochete that causes Lyme disease. So he identified the bacteria that causes Lyme disease. Donald Stuckey invented Corningware, died at age 99, almost made it 100.
Wow. Corning Labs in New York. Yep. Also created the mirrors for many of the early telescopes that were used in the first half of the 20th century, including Mount Wilson Observatory in California.
Merton Sandler, a pioneer in psychopharmacology. Jerry Mach, first woman to fly solo around the world.
Oh, wow.
Oleg Ivanovsky, who was a Russian rocket scientist. Arthur Hulman, who helped pioneer the heart-lung machine. Peter Marler, who showed that birds learn to sing and helped decode their songs. Donald Ross was Britain's first heart transplant surgeon in 1968. Stephanie Kowalik developed Kevlar. She gets a lot of mentions everywhere. So she developed the fibers that were woven together to make Kevlar.
Nice.
Gerald Edelman, Nobel Prize 1972 in physiology or medicine for the structure of antibodies. That's kind of basic. Alexander Shulgin, called the grandfather of psychedelics.
Nice.
Ralph Baer. You guys are going to all appreciate this one. Ralph Baer is the father of video games.
Oh, yeah.
This guy developed the first video game.
Yeah, I watched a YouTube video on him, and it was really cool how the whole thing unfolded.
Yeah. George Heilmeier developed LCD technology.
That'll never catch on.
Richard Batten developed computer control and guidance system used by Apollo, so he's one of the guys who helped get us to the moon. If you believe that we went to the moon. Herb Lottman, who's the father of Chicken McNuggets.
Okay.
Roger Eastern. Easton, Roger Easton, father of GPS. So we got LCD technology, GPS, Kevlar, and video games all represented.
Oh,
and here's an interesting
God.
One. Andrew K. Do you guys remember K-Pro computers from the 80s?
Yeah.
K-Pro. Yeah,
Andrew K. So if anything.
In a relation to Andrew W.K. Was this guy all about partying?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Do you guys, anyone ever watch the show Halt and Catch Fire? It's about a 1980s computer company that was producing a kind of a luggable computer, and just that story that they're following in that show. It's very good, by the way, Halt and Catch Fire. Reminded me a lot of the story of this company, K-Pro Computers. It basically went from 1982 to 1992, developing totally proprietary computers. They didn't adapt to the whole IBM compatible era when that happened, and then the company died. So, and then there's also some people that I think are recognizable from popular and geek culture that deserve a mention. Glenn A. Larson. Does that name ring a bell?
Absolutely.
No. Oh.
No. Battlestar Galactica, Knight Rider, Magnum PI. If you watched television in the 80s,
yes,
you saw this guy's name in the end credits. Tom Magliozzi. This was sad. Tom Magliozzi is one of the brothers of Car Talk.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Car Talk was so good.
That
show was so good that I listened to it because of the relationship between the two brothers. I didn't really care much about the Car Talk, you know?
Oh, no doubt about it. It. For us AM radio listeners from way back when, Car Talk was always accessible on the weekends, and you just stopped. You had to hear. It didn't matter what they were talking about, cars or movies or food. It didn't matter. They were so much fun to listen to.
Oh, absolutely. They were partly role models and an inspiration for the SGU. I mean, I listen to Car Talk every week, and I'm always listening with the ear of, oh, these guys are so good. You know, I'm just trying to get inspiration from them how to be better at doing shows like that, you know. Richard Kiel, who played
Jaws
from James Bond, right?
Yeah.
And Evan, we just impersonated him a few minutes ago. Don Pardo, the SNL announcer.
Yeah.
Don, tell him what he's won. Yep.
Damn.
James Brady, who was...
Oh, yeah.
The Brady Bill.
The Brady Bill, yep. He was shot during the attempted Reagan assassination. Casey Kasem. Casey Kasem died this year.
Yeah, that's right. Shaggy from Scooby-Doo.
Yeah,
himself, the original.
He did the voices of a lot of Saturday morning cartoon characters.
He did, yep.
He did.
And there's this huge, weird controversy about like where his corpse is and when it's going to be buried. It's like this weird thing. Well, yeah.
I think it found its way to Montreal and got buried there.
It was a fight.
It was a fight between his wife, you know.
And the family,
And the family, the children. And he wound up in Montreal.
H.R. Giger? Or is it Geiger?
He died?
The artist who created Alien. Yep. Fred Phelps, the anti-gay church guy, Fred Phelps Sr., died this year.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
God rest his soul.
Hal Douglas, who is the movie trailer voiceover guy.
Well, there's multiple guys that do that.
I know, but he's like the really famous, the really, profound, deep voice. If you make fun of like movie trailer voiceover guy, that's who you're making fun of. And then Russell Johnson. Who was the professor?
Oh, God, the professor.
The professor from Gilligan's Island.
Roy Hinckley.
I am sad.
He could do anything with coconuts. Well,
just
the lady
get off an island.
The actress that played Alice on the Brady Bunch.
Yep, Alice.
And Bette Davis.
Well, guys, it's time for the last science or fiction of the year.
I didn't realize we were doing a science or fiction.
I didn't either.
Wait, I thought we already did the last one of the year.
Uh-uh. This is actually...
Didn't someone prepare the stats?
Nine years. I do the same thing every year.
I think we question it every year.
Probably.
What I do is
been a long year.
I pull three science or fiction items from throughout the year.
Oh, crap.
To see if you guys can remember.
So I remember them all.
These are items. Really, really easy to study for this one if you remember that I do it every year.
Sure, but we only had to research 8,000 other things for this show.
But I may have switched like which was the fiction and which was the science.
Whoa! Okay, let's do it.
Right.
Okay.
So
it's time for science or fiction.
Each week, I come up with three science news items or facts, two genuine and one fictitious. Then I challenge my panel of skeptics to tell me which one is the fake. The theme is 2014 review, items from the past year. Here we go. Item number one, scientists report the results of the first mapping of a genome of a Clovis skeleton, finding that they possess Asian ancestry from a side branch unrelated to present-day Native American populations. Item number two, astronomers report the first discovery of a possible exomoon. And item number three, new research finds that online gaming largely expands and supplements players' social lives and does not replace or diminish it. Rebecca, since this is your last science or fiction as a full-time rogue, you get to go first.
Some things never change.
All right.
Damn you, Steve. Go ahead.
First mapping of a genome of a Clovis. I don't remember this at all. Finding that they possess Asian ancestry from a side branch unrelated to present-day Native American populations. I do not remember that. So that's an early front-runner for fiction for me. First discovery of a possible exomoon. So that's a moon around a planet, around a star, other than our own,
right?
Correct. I do vaguely... That sounds... I feel like that happened. I'm pretty sure that happened. Online gaming expands and supplements players' social lives, doesn't replace or diminish it. I 100% believe that. I probably believed it before, but online gaming does in fact, connect you to other people in new and interesting ways. And yeah, very rarely. So I'm going to go with the Clovis skeleton as being the fiction because I don't remember that one happening at all. So maybe my brain deleted it because it's fiction. Sure.
Okay, Bob.
It is funny how looking back at these, our memories are just so jumbled about what was science, what was fiction, and the fact that you've actually admitted that you may have switched them up. Switching them up, it's such a jumble. They might all be brand new again. But out of respect for Rebecca, I'm going to pull a GWR on this one.
Nice.
And mainly because I'm very happy that I will have no competition in this game once she's gone. So that makes me very happy. She beat me most often. If you tally it all up, I think she beat me more than I beat her. But we were always very close.
It was close and though.
And
yeah.
It was, we were always 1-2 at least. And, yeah. So I'm gonna miss that hell? And I'm just gonna cruise through the next, 10 years. It's gonna be so easy for me to be number one. So I'm gonna pull GWR. GWR.
GWR.
GWR. All right.
All right. Okay.
Jay?
Jay? I'm gonna ignore everything that Bob said.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And I'm gonna GWR.
Nice.
Because this is my last opportunity to GWR, and I will miss these opportunities to GWR. Uh-huh. So I will GWR.
All right.
Man, I'm going to feel like shit if I was wrong.
Evan?
Taking you guys all with
Wait
me.
For me. I want to join. Rebecca, hold me.
Uh-huh. Yes, GWR. There's just okay. How can I do anything else but that? Please.
Yeah, right? Come on.
All right. We'll take these in reverse order then. New research finds that online gaming largely expands and supplements players' social lives and does not replace or diminish it. You all think that one is science, and that one is...
Science.
Science.
Woo-hoo.
That was science.
Yes.
Reworded from when I originally included it was a fiction, but I made it into a science for this version.
So this is good. We can continue playing online games together.
Yes, absolutely.
Ooh,
I remember this one specifically.
Two astronomers report the first discovery of a possible exomoon. You all think that one is science, and that one is also science.
Yes!
The year-end sweep.
One last win.
Yeah. Year-end sweep.
GWR.
Which means that scientists report the results of the first mapping of a genome of a Clovis skeleton, finding that they possess Asian ancestry, but from a side branch unrelated to present-day Native American populations is the fiction. This was science when I presented it originally.
Yes, it was.
The real story is that they they mapped the genome of the Clovis skeleton, finding that it has 85%, I think, relatedness to modern present-day Native American populations. So the basically Clovis was the ancestor to modern Native Americans.
Yep. Rebecca, you were never in any danger. I happened to look at every science of the science of fiction for the past year and distinctly remembered reading this just about four or five hours ago. So I was like, yup, he changed that one. I remember. So
you remember that he does this every year.
Actually, I didn't. I kind of was foggy about it. I remember Steve saying, this is the last science fiction about a month ago in New Zealand. And like, oh, but I read them all because I needed to fill out other information for the show and unrelated to the science of fiction. But I would have GWR'd regardless, maybe, unless you were clearly.
All right. Do you guys want to hear the stats? Do you guys want to hear the 2014 stats?
Wow, Bob. That was a hell of a tap dance there, Bob. And thanks for insulting me and Jay along the way. We appreciate it. We'll see you in the alley.
Stats are stats.
All right. So guess who won this year?
I don't even know. When I was sent
with. This is a rough year.
Steve won.
Yes, I won.
Yay, Steve.
With 66.67%. So I got 2 out of 3. So awesome. I won. And then of the rest of you guys, Rebecca won with 60.64%.
Bob, yay, Rebecca.
Very close behind with 58.16%.
Oh, nice.
Jay had a very good year, 56%, just a little bit behind Bob.
Wow.
And Evan, better the year than you've had in the past, just a little bit behind with 53%. So everyone.
That's my best year.
Everyone did above average. Yeah, did.
Nice.
Well,
that's weird because it felt like this was a harder year.
It did. Like it really did. It seemed like we were screwing up left and right.
Now, when I have percentages for the percentage of games where there was a theme. And, and everyone dropped. Rebecca, you dropped from 60% to 50% when there was a theme. Bob dropped to 50% also, so you guys were equal. Jay dropped to 40% and Evan dropped to 42%. So everyone
was
lower.
That's
hilarious. Oh, wow.
I knew it wasn't just my imagination.
Yeah, right?
Rebecca had the longest winning streak of 9. Jay had the longest losing streak of 7.
Ouch. Whoa. I don't remember that.
That's rough.
Wow.
So here's this is interesting. I would not have guessed this. So the number of times that everybody went with the first person to give the answer. So,
I would think that would be low. I would think that would be low.
So, but guess who had the most times that they led everybody else?
I did.
Evan.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Evan had the most.
Yeah.
Actually, the way the stat was calculated was the number of times somebody went with somebody else. Doesn't have to be a sweep. So, Evan.
So, should be GWE.
Yeah, so yeah. GWE was 21 times, then Jay at 19, then Rebecca at 16, and then Bob at the bottom with 11.
That's so weird.
Interesting. That's not
That's
int-
like the
intuitive.
Exact opposite that I would have guessed.
Yeah, I think your numbers are screwed up.
I swept all of you. How many times did I sweep all of you this year?
I don't know, four?
Six five times. Five times.
Seven. Thank you.
Nice.
Whoa, I don't remember those.
Good job,
nice.
And how many times did you guys sweep me?
Four.
Oh, shit. 21. 31.
12. 12 times.
Oh.
Yeah, baby.
If you include just now, 13.
Oh. Yeah.
13 if you
include. My lucky number. Now. What I don't like is, by my memory, I should have won this year.
Yeah. Well, you know.
I thought you were up there too. I would have thought we were closer.
Well, here's the thing. Bob, Jay, and Rebecca all won 28 games, but Rebecca played a couple fewer games.
Oh,
and
that affects
Bob,
the percentage.
And the person who calculated these for us gave Bob and Rebecca a half a point because of a adjudication.
I didn't like that.
But Bob, Jay, and Rebecca all got 28 clean without not including the other things.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Wow. Not including the cheaty half point. Wow.
Yeah. Not including the cheaty half point and Rebecca bowing out of obviously a couple of hard games. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm disgusted with all of you. That's my stance.
Yeah. This has been terrible.
Well, regardless of Jay's disgust, thank you, Allison, for your efforts in tabulating these results throughout the entire year. It's appreciated. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wait, we had somebody else tabulate the results, Steve, I thought.
Well, you got to have an independent auditor do this kind of stuff. You trust Bob to keep these stats? Hell no.
Taylor
he
Harris
us.
Was also a huge huge information contributor for Science or Fiction. I have more information that Taylor shared with us.
Yep, go ahead. Listen. Yep.
Steve says that he uses a die to randomize these, right, Steve? Is that correct?
That is correct.
So
that's correct what he says.
Here are the numbers for 1, 2, and 3. Number 1 was the fiction 13 times. Number 2 was the fiction 12 times. And number 3 was the fiction 24 times.
Whoa.
Now
that's an anomaly.
Oh, I think that's probably all within statistical chance.
Yeah, randomness is clumpy.
That's
not including today's show, of course.
Yeah.
Except for the hot hand shooter.
Yeah. I mean, I do. I roll the die.
That's a joke.
Yeah. Every time.
Okay. Well, there you have it.
That die is perfectly balanced, right?
Who knows? Maybe it isn't. I'll use a different die for next year. So.
Excellent. Use that 100-sided die that takes 3 minutes to land on the spot.
Hey, guys, let's talk about 2015 a little bit. So we have some upcoming conferences and events that I want to talk about. Nexus will be April 11th through 13th in 2015. It's going to be a full 3-day conference. We're going to have a full day of conference on Friday, which is going to be all science-based medicine, and then the regular Saturday-Sunday conference. So April 11th through 13th in New York City, mark your calendars. Specific details will be coming out soon. And as Jay mentioned earlier in the show, 2015 will include our 500th episode and our 10-year anniversary, and we are planning special events for both of them. For our 500th episode, which we are recording on February 7th, this is the episode that will be coming out on Valentine's Day, February 14th. That'll be our 500th episode. We are going to record a live show that we are calling the SGU House Party. Basically going to have a party. We're inviting a lot of local skeptics and local friends. We already have a couple of confirmed guests, including Massimo Pigliucci and John Rennie.
Awesome.
And Joshi Berger are all going to be there. There'll be more. We're inviting more people. And it's going to be a lot of fun, and we're just going to basically have a party and record an episode at the same time. That'll be our 500th episode. And 10-year anniversary. So the actual day is May 5th. So for the episode that week, we are going to record that on Saturday, May 2nd. And we are going to do a 10-hour live streaming SGU marathon. This suggestion came from Craig Good also. 10 hours for 10 years. So this will be just like our 24-hour episode. It's only going to be 10 hours, which I think we'll be able to survive.
So video as well as audio.
Video and audio. Yep. Absolutely. Video, cool. Audio, live streaming, 10 hours, May 2nd. You know, the exact time. It'd probably be noon to 10 p.m., but, you know, again, as we get closer, we'll be publishing exact details. Send us suggestions for stuff you'd like us to do for either of those two special episodes. We're going to start producing them right now. Well, right after as soon as the new year begins, as soon as the holidays are over and we've recovered a little bit more, we're going to start producing those two shows. So that's it, guys. Jay, do you have a quote for us this week?
Listener named Alan Laird from Colorado has sent a really awesome quote that you'll like, Steve. And the quote is, "The most terrifying fact about the universe is not that it is hostile, but that it is indifferent. But if we can come to terms with this indifference, then our existence as a species can have genuine meaning. However vast the darkness, we must supply our own light." And that is from famous director Stanley Kubrick.
Actually, I love that quote. I'm glad it's from him.
Yeah. That is a great quote.
Nice.
That is my exact philosophy. The universe doesn't give a fuck about us. We have to make our own light. I like that a lot. So, Rebecca, this is it.
Yeah. Thanks again for 9 fun years. This is a good date.
They were great. Yeah.
Rebecca, thank you. Thank you so much for saying yes, you know, 9 years ago and doing all this with us. It's been absolutely our pleasure to be your friend and be your fellow podcaster. You will always be the Rebecca in my life.
The Rebecca.
Or the Rachel.
Or the Rachel.
Yeah.
The Rachel.
Except for in Evan's life. He's got one already.
I have two now.
Thank you, guys. It's been a fun time, and thank you to all the audience. And, you know, I'll be around. I'm around. So it's not a goodbye. It's a see you later.
See you later. That sounds good.
Yeah.
We will see you later, Rebecca. Rebecca, you will always be part of the SGU not just the SGU brand, but just the SGU spirit. You have made your imprint on this show. You have affected all of us, I think, in a very good way, made us better at doing what we're doing. And we will never forget that.
Thanks. Ditto.
We love you, Rebecca.
I love you too.
So, but guys, this is our last show of
especially
the year.
Especially me, right?
Yep.
No comments.
No. last show.
Thank you.
This is the last show of the year. So until next week and until next year, this is your Skeptic's Guide to the Universe.
The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe is produced by SGU Productions, dedicated to promoting science and critical thinking. For more information on this and other episodes, please visit our website at theskepticsguide.org, where you will find the show notes as well as links to our blogs, videos, online forum, and other content. You can send us feedback or questions to info@theskepticsguide.org. Also, please consider supporting the SGU by visiting the store page on our website, where you will find merchandise, premium content, and subscription information. Our listeners are what make SGU possible. We'll be right back.